Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV, movies, and other fun superhero-related things. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my epic crew team. We row crew. That's how this works. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
I'm in a boat.
I honestly thought you'd never be there. Guy English is also here. Hello, Guy.
I am about, I don't know, one quarter to two thirds not hot enough to row crew. If you're looking for somebody to row crew, you're looking in the wrong place. It ain't me.
I'm going to say the closest I've gotten to rowing crew is wearing a crew neck shirt. So, yeah, it's not very close.
Yeah. Well, and there was that one time in college.
Yeah, well, we don't talk about that, though. We are back. We're here to talk about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 6, Episode 10, entitled, I believe, Leap, which, in retrospect, I guess was kind of a clue. And I have drawn the short straw this week, and I'm here to talk.
There was only one straw.
Yes,
and you went first.
That felt like the game might be rigged, but you know, I trust you guys.
We should be perfectly honest. Neither John or I did the homework. I think it landed on me that I should have done it. I feel like it's my fault.
I was trying to do the homework, and my dog ate it. But we've seen the episode.
My flirkin ate it. It was unfortunate.
Right. We actually seen the episode, which is, you know, up from what my usual take is.
I'm going to try to do this one fast, because there's a lot of stuff to talk about this week, both in this episode and in Superhero Sweep. So let's get on with it. We pick up pretty much after where we left off last week, where somebody who appeared to be Melinda May shot Sarge a bunch. He gets dragged out, and May basically confesses to shooting him, even though nobody really believes it. However, Sarge, not so much dead. Simmons is sort of keeping the wraps on the fact that he seems to be recovering from his injuries and getting stronger. We see the several flashbacks throughout this episode of Sarge seeing sort of an indistinct person, a woman whose face you can't see. Everybody doesn't quite get the... nobody really believes that May did this, because they think that she'd beat him up. And then we quickly have May insisting she didn't do this. Piper gets attacked. Fitz and Deke have a heart-to-heart to be interrupted by quote-unquote Piper. And we start to get the idea that something weird is going on here. We have then a lengthy chain of people, like, in kind of a fascinating whodunit slash pastiche of The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing, right? Where it's like, nobody's sure who is who, and they lock down the entire base.
I do love The Thing.
And
If I could see The Thing every day, I would. That's
you. Well, it seems possible.
That's a little weirder than I made it to. Give me The Thing all the time. But so basically, it's a great movie. Let's do more of The Thing. This is it's a terrific setup, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, we established that Izel is jumping between the bodies. She's looking for the monolith using a Shrike crystal, and we have a really great scene at one point where all of our cast is basically in the command center together, trying to suss out who is Izel. And then we get a, you know, actual demonstration as she sort of emerges from the body, and we determine that she's basically able to possess anybody she wants and make them do whatever she wants. Mac locks Daisy and Yo-Yo away because they are the strongest, and if she gets them, they're in super trouble. And then we have some really, truly awful pseudo-horror scenes where Izel, you know, possesses Piper, makes her shoot herself through her hand, and then she jumps into Davis and kills him by basically throwing him off some stairs, which is very sad. Sarge basically comes back to, he knows that he's still, you know, Izel's loose, essentially. We get a little explanation of what Izel might be after, because we know the monolith supposedly exploded last season and created the fear dimension, but that there is some residual left, and there's some supposition that the third monolith, we know one was space, one was time. Fitz speculates the third one might have been creation, and that somehow the second Coulson was created by that, but he doesn't know it. Sarge gets out, finds Izal, who's in the room with the gravitonium orb, which supposedly contains all of the monolith energy. He shoots her a bunch that doesn't really do anything, and she does the whole "join me, together we will take over the galaxy." And he's all angry about not remembering his family, even though she basically explains they weren't his. He is, in fact, Pachakutik, who we've heard mentioned before, and they come from some other dimension where they don't have bodies. He left and inspired Izal to leave, and basically the Shrike are all creating hosts and bodies for all of those people. Sarge tries to stop her, but Izal says he can stop her, but he has to, like, essentially, like, let go or you know, like, let all his power out or something. She manages to possess Yo-Yo, and Mac agrees to go with her so that she won't hurt Yo-Yo if she gets the Zephyr, basically. So they take the orb and the Zephyr. And at the end, we have Sarge, a hint of Sarge's powers to come, which involve him looking kind of weirdly, maybe monolithy a little bit, like he's got some stuff that, like, his hands, like, disintegrating but, like, reforming weirdly, like, like all the Shrike flying around or something. So some answers, but a lot more questions.
Now, who can remind me, who was she when they locked it down the
in the command center? We're supposed to think she's Deke, because that's right. The last person
we've
seen.
And she's not Deke. She's somebody else.
Was she Piper at that point? I can't remember now.
I can't remember either. Yeah. Yeah, but she had jumped to somebody else.
It was a clever head fake, right?
Yeah, because the last person you saw
and Deke is acting weird.
And Deke's being a jerk, yeah. Because he doesn't completely get along with everybody, but...
Right, and we've got this line where he's like, "I don't have any secrets because I talk all the time." And you're like, "I can't tell if that's somebody pretending to be Deke or actually Deke." It's kind of hard. But yeah, I thought that was a great setup. It's super creepy, and it is. You know, I saw some people complaining about, like, well, we don't know what, like, the rules of it are, or whatever. And I think they even say that in the show at one point, right? Like, we don't know what the deal is, like, how long she can possess people, what it takes for her to jump from body to body. I think that's fine in this episode.
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't think it matters. Like, it makes it more suspenseful because you do realize that they essentially are operating at a huge disadvantage here.
Right. I mean, I think it matters that the rules are consistent, but I don't think it matters that we don't know what the rules are to begin with.
Yes, I agree.
But I think that's a benefit, though, no? Right? Like, if we knew what the rules were, I think we would be questioning what happened a little bit more.
You'd be in a different mindset, too. You'd be, like, in an analytical mindset instead of just, like, I'm freaked out mindset.
Yeah. Right. And, because that's part of the like... going through that discovery process is part of what makes it scary.
What I liked a lot about this, that scene in particular, was that it reminded me, I don't know if you guys have ever played any of the, oh, pardon the thunder in the background, enjoy my Foley work. I don't know if you guys have ever played any board games that are like the hidden loyalty games, so like Werewolf is a popular example, or Mafia. It reminded me a lot of that as they all try to suss out, like, well, you would say that if you were her, right? Like, I had some good flashbacks to playing the game Resistance with our friend Tony Sindelar, and the phrase we coined, of course, is, "Oh, that sounds like spy talk." There's some good little moments in here. There's a, whose line is it? Somebody says, "No one saying anything makes it scarier." There's the confessions of the various secrets, including the fact that Davis stole a space pen from some aliens.
Yeah, the space pen is pretty funny.
Yeah, that was a good bit. Yeah. Which is undercut a moment later as, like, they kill him off, and I'm super bummed about that, because we talked last week about like, oh no, did they kill him? And yeah, she totally offs him there, like throwing him off the stairs, and all I can think about is, like, oh,
which is the second time we thought he was dead.
Yeah.
I mean, Doug, well, you know, maybe now the third. I mean,
I've lost track, frankly.
Depending on how you count them, but, you know, he was suspected to have been killed by Ava.
Right. Yeah, I'm bummed about that, but it also does efficiently raise the stakes a bit, too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, right. There's a... The nobody is safe. I was wondering who was flying the Zephyr. I guess it flies itself these days. I don't know.
Yo-Yo can fly.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Right, because she was going to fly the Quinjet over to, so apparently she knows how to fly.
Okay, right.
Which maybe they just dropped in there.
I guess you only need like
the previous episode.
You only need like one.
Oh, she's going to fly this thing later.
I believe it can fly.
You know how to fly.
There was a Ghost Rider callback, where mm-hmm. Fitz explains that they knew an entity kind of like this. Like Sarge essentially to say like yeah. I had forgotten the whole fear dimension thing from the end of last season, right? That was creepy.
Yeah, it was pretty close to the end, right? Yeah, because it's before they get married, so it's a few at least one episode before the last episode.
Right.
Maybe even two, but I can't remember. That's one of my favorite episodes from last season, I would say, because that's that scene where what's his name? The guy from Angel. Mr. Peterson. Deathlock.
Oh, yes, Deathlock.
Shows up.
Yeah.
It's a very very dramatic entrance, and then he says, "Come on, Coulson, pick up the doodad." But the whole scene where his fake him tries to convince Coulson that he's just imagined the whole thing and that he's dying on the operating table, and they do these quick cuts with him and the team is pretty good stuff.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good things here. I really enjoyed the fact that everybody. I love that everybody doesn't believe that May killed Sarge, not because she wouldn't do it necessarily, but because she would have beat him up.
She wouldn't have used a gun.
She just used her hands.
Like, that is great.
She might have beaten him to death, but, like, never have just shot him.
Also the scene where they go question Davis, and he's like, yeah, May said it was really sweet and said I should go get some rest, and it was like, Melinda May was sweet?
Sweet?
And he's like, oh. Now that I think about it, that does sound pretty weird. I enjoyed a lot of the character moments. This is pretty good for it's also like a bottle episode, right? Like we don't leave the base, which makes it very claustrophobic. It kind of reminded me a little bit of it must be end of season one. There's the episode where Daisy's in one of the other SHIELD bunkers, and the one where she finds out Ward is Hydra.
Because, oh yeah, yeah.
Because right. It's been like written on the like the wallpaper or whatever. Like, and then
she finds Koenig.
Koenig. Right.
And then she writes it on the wallpaper.
Right, right. Yeah.
She has to leave with him.
But there is a whole like there is a creepy bunker one, right? Where he like Ward's running around that bunker and like people are trying not to let on.
It's just the three of them in there, and then Ward kills Koenig.
Yeah, so and I then, think that's
and then he's like all like lovey with her and it's like he's Hydra, get away from him.
Creepy. Yeah, so I enjoyed this a lot. I thought it was a really solid outing and very I like the sort of genre pivot here to like sort of a more thriller horror aspect. I thought it worked really well.
Yeah.
The mechanics of what's her name? I forget.
Izel.
I'm gonna forget her name. Izel. That felt believable. It felt like they we started the episode by saying that we didn't have rules for her, but we sort of established them, right? Like in weird little ways. Like she steps out of Davis's body before he falls. Like she. They ground her with a sense of gravity in a weird way. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Well, it's interesting, too. I couldn't figure out for a little bit whether she was visible always or whether she could control that, right? Because we don't see her in the last episode, right? Like, we don't see the body jump.
So
we
the
see
way
Davis
people
go,
yeah.
go down.
Right, the, right. Well, no, we do. We see Davis drop, but she.
We don't see like, her Davis's visibly show up.
No, we do.
In the last episode?
In the previous
episode.
He said
In the previous episode. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. In this one, it's like pretty explicit. I don't know if she can control that or if that's a technique of editing.
And there's definitely something like there's some sort of memory fuzziness.
Some
sort of like time delay or something like that, because Piper shoots at her as she's coming at her. But then sort of like when she leaves her, doesn't really remember like what's going on. Like there's some, you know, somehow it affects their short-term memory.
There's an Izel hangover because everybody remembers coming to and being like, oh, I saw the person, right? Like the next host essentially. Yeah.
But then they don't remember exactly like seeing her step out of the body and into their body.
So this episode also gives us the answer to pretty much who Sarge is, right? Like we kind of get the pull back the curtain on that a little bit. We know not only who this entity is, although we still don't know his entire backstory and neither does he, but we do know essentially how he ended up taking Coulson's form through the combination of all the monoliths. And I like there's a nice touch at the end of the episode where, you know, after they've recovered him or whatever, somebody puts a shield jacket on him.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a pan up past the logo. And so I'm kind of curious to see where they go with that, because, you know, he does definitely, even though she tries to give him the whole, you know, Vader join me speech, whatever. Yeah. He's still pretty insistent that he is there to kill her, even though, you know, he doesn't remember anything other than she took away this thing that he doesn't actually remember.
But they were they're like sort of lovers before.
That's the implication, certainly.
Right? Yeah. And then somehow he inhabited the body and changed, I guess.
Right, right. This is we've talked about this a little bit before, but there is like some sort of mythological character or something with this name. So I'm kind of curious to know. Yes, because as I recall, we talked about this in a previous episode, because the name means he who overturns space and time. It seems awfully convenient when two of the monoliths were space and time.
Is that Azel's name or is that the name Pachacutic, that he says?
Pachacutic.
Oh, Pachacutic. Okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting allegory or something that we got going on here. So I thought that was intriguing. I don't quite know where we go from here. There's three episodes left, I believe. And so clearly we're setting up our final showdown of Izel versus our team. We have a few more weeks for that to come to fruition.
Yeah, I would think that they would clear up the Coulson thing before the end of the season, before going to next season. But
yeah, I mean, I assume no reason to think he's not sticking around. Like,
right,
being six seasons into the show and they've announced in the next season, the final season, I don't think he's gonna be like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, and we're doing it without Clark Gregg.
Well, I go back to my conspiracy corner from earlier in the season, which is we have the cube that has all of Coulson's memories in it. And I wonder if they'll find a way to use that to,
right,
quote unquote, reboot him in Sarge's body.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's my theory. Still banking on that. I've got some money down at that.
That's good. That's a good theory. It's better than any theories I have.
Yeah. Well, that's the only bet I made.
That it was better than my theories.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't bet that it was right. I just, you know. Playing the odds. Any thoughts on this episode? Guy, you've been very quiet.
I have been very quiet. I typically just sort of barge in a lot. Has anybody seen the Picard trailer?
We can talk about that, but not right now.
How many times is really the question? And
yeah, I know.
And frame by frame.
I know. Yeah, I know. I'm mostly joking. I've been waiting because I like this episode a lot. It you guys covered it well. I didn't really have anything to interject, although that's typically what I do. if I had interjected, it would have been heavy breathing and excitement. So, you know.
Creepy.
See, we
well, it's
we
not creepy.
That. We missed that.
It's a little bit. Yeah, no, that, yeah, it
no,
is creepy.
No, right. Dan's
do you,
right.
Do you really want that?
No.
I don't think you want that.
I do not.
Right. But so, no, this this was a great episode. And I suppose what I'm doing is I'm waiting for the ritual before I actually comment on this. There were so many great character moments in this. I am really, really sad that they killed Davis that way. Yeah. I don't think he deserved to go out like a chump. I do. What I would like to call out, which you guys completely failed because you are bad at this, is that well, you asked me. Hey, fair. Dan, you did ask.
I did. That was my mistake.
Never it was. I mean, you did ask me, in fact, to be on the show, which again is something you're going to
another
root.
Lapse in judgment.
Yeah, you're going to root for that for a long, long time, my friend. when Piper is possessed and when Davis has the shot, I loved it. I love the look on his face. Mm-hmm. I love that he was like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like he knew what he should do and he couldn't do it. And it was even before Mac told him to shoot. Like they gave us a shot of his face and he was like, that's it. I'm not going to do it. And it led to his death. And I liked it.
And we talked about their relationship last week.
Yeah.
How much we like that dynamic.
No, I love it. Yeah.
And her reaction when he dies is great too. Yep.
Yeah. That's the next thing I was going to say is that she had an equal reaction for her, based on her love for him. And again, whatever. I suppose everybody's watching the show, but that's not a sexual relationship or romantic relationship in any kind of way. It's just
two buds.
And John, if you ever get possessed,
it's gonna be me. Let's face it.
Yeah, it seems like
let me just tell you I'm gonna shoot you in the head. That's I think that's the best choice.
I appreciate that.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what, actually, you know what I would do is try to get you on a plane and have your natural.
I will not be the person who's flying the plane.
Right. Yeah. Have your natural. Have your natural instincts.
She will jump out of my body if you get if you get me on a plane.
He literally ain't getting on the plane.
Well, I mean, here's for you, Dan. That's how much he loves you. Man.
I know, and I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so you asked me to talk more, and I think that was kind of heartfelt, and I, maybe unwelcome, but that's where I stand.
Do we want to add anything else, or should we go to the ritual since Guy has sort of broached that topic already?
Let's go to the ritual.
Let's go to the ritual.
We got other things
tape.
To talk about.
We do. Guy, you want to just top that off by giving your ritual? How's the system work again?
Hey, John, what's the system, John?
How does the system work?
No, John, seriously, what's the system?
Yeah. I don't remember.
Really?
Because all I've been saying is Biff for the last season. No, it's,
do you really
Biff
not remember?
Good, John Jr. is middling, and Alex is terrible.
Okay. Thank God. Thank God you listened to me.
Yeah.
That's
I hear it every week.
It means a lot to me that you would actually remember that. That's it. It's just wonderful. Turns out it's a Biff. it's a good show. It's just a good show.
Yeah,
I think we're gonna need to maybe
at this point, but.
Yeah, I think we may need to recalibrate it because I think we are calibrating against Arrow, which is also a good show, but does have episodes that can dip pretty low.
Yeah, true.
And I think the average episode of this show,
yeah,
is, you know, it's always going to be a bear rather than, you know,
yeah, maybe
dipping into an hour.
Yeah, and some not as good ones, but they generally
yeah
to be pretty good.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. This
that's
means
interesting.
Some not as good
I
ones
because I'm rewatching and I have not been judging it in that manner. Maybe I should see if there are any John Juniors or Alexes in the previous seasons.
Can I just between us, John? Is the do you have Conspiracy Corner open?
It's okay. Nobody's listening. Go ahead.
Okay. The rating system is kind of, you know, made up and doesn't really make a lot of sense. So
is that Conspiracy Corner or just like Fact Corner?
So just between you and us.
Okay.
You know, maybe don't rewatch the entire show trying to figure out what's a Biff, what's an Alex, and what's a John Jr. Because I think that may work against you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
John, you want to go ahead next?
It's a Biff.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah. I will round it out with three Biffs. Like I said, I enjoyed the claustrophobic kind of creepy aspect of the body jumping, and it was played to truly horrific ends. So I'm not entirely sure about the whole, like, we're, as you know, bodiless entities fighting through space and time. It definitely feels of a tone. We mentioned, like, the first half of the season having kind of, like, Star Trek-y overtones. That feels a little Star Trek-y to me, which could be fine. Could be fine. I don't know. But, like, I'm a little like, all right, I want to see where the payoff is going on this. But you know, we will find out imminently. But I'll still, you know, I'll come down on a Biff, which means three Biffs. Our season continues to maintain its perfect Biff record, so I guess we're very discerning. All right. I don't want to spend too much more time on this because there is much more to talk about, so we are going to take it right to the superhero sweep. As I mentioned last week, it was Comic-Con this past weekend, which of course means the floodgates opened on a number of things, including Saturday night, Eastern time anyways, there was the Marvel panel happened, and it was very hot here, and so we actually ended up retreating to one of my cousin's houses because they had air conditioning, and crashed there for the night. And I like came in at one point and my wife was reading like, she's like, you might want to sit down for this. And then she told me about the Natalie Portman being Thor in the next Thor movie. And
yeah,
I had like a, well, this is amazing on many levels.
It really is. I was not expecting that whatsoever. I was, you know, and I couldn't tell from, I mean, I know she was credited in Endgame, but it seemed like the stuff that, like, she didn't have a line in there, I don't think.
Somewhere else I read it said that was unused footage from Dark World.
Okay, so she was probably credited knowing that she was going to be in the next, you know.
Yeah, it did say there was originally a scene written where Rocket has to convince her, but I don't think that even got to filming necessarily. So
right.
But it does answer the question of why she is credited so prominently in the end credits in Endgame, despite the fact
that... Which seemed weird.
Yeah, she doesn't even have a line,
because I thought she was just done.
Yeah, yeah. I made a joke years ago that I really wanted, like, the post-credits sequence in Ragnarok to be her like finding the hammer or something like that. I thought that would be awesome, and I was like, they'll never do that. And I am delighted to be proved wrong.
Yeah that'll be interesting. I mean, they have to get Mjolnir back somehow, but
right
but I'm sure they can handle that
or make a new one, who knows.
Yeah, well, Loki's out there jumping around, so
yeah. Well, wait, how do they wait? No, they don't have to get it back. I mean, didn't
Cap took it back. Cap took it back in time.
Oh yeah, but he didn't. Right, he didn't return it. What a jerk!
He did return it. He just returned it.
He did return it, but then it gets destroyed by
Hella. Anyway, Hella.
Timey
wimey, wibbly wobbly.
Goes back into the loop. Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed. I don't know if I read all of that run, but I read a lot of that run.
I did,
and I thought it was really good.
It's one of the better ones of the last 10 years.
I wonder a lot how much of that they will commit to, because I'm sure they will take a different spin on it. But like, you know, it has in the comics, there's some downside that comes with that too,
right?
And I don't know if they will go in that direction or not, but Yeah. I won't, you know, not to spoil too much in case they do. I also wonder how much it took to lure her back, because I think of a lot of the actors who've been in the MCU, she struck me as one who maybe felt like wasn't that invested in it in some ways.
Yeah.
But I wonder,
do you think that was reflected on screen, or do you just
no, I mean, I think she's a professional. I think she does a good job, but she never, you know, and I will say,
I don't think she was really that well utilized.
Right. I agree with that 100%. And I will color this by saying that, like, you know, like Natalie Portman, literally like my first crush, like as a teenager, like as an adult, you know, and so I'm a big fan of her work, and I thought, I love that she's in the movies, but yeah, I agree with you, John, that she felt mostly underutilized. And it didn't necessarily seem like her thing exactly, right? Like, you look at the rest, her oeuvre is you know, varied, but it didn't necessarily seem like big blockbusters, especially after her experience with the Star Wars movies, would be a thing that she gravitated back towards.
Yeah, true. Yeah,
but I'm sorry, I have to imagine part of that might have been working with Taika Waititi. I feel like that's a pretty good, you know, reason to come back. And
that'll be really interesting.
I'm sure he's made.
I didn't really think about
promises.
That. I mean, I heard that I knew that he was going to be directing it, but I didn't think about him directing that story in particular, which is going to be cool.
from a larger standpoint, I'm really enjoying some of the wacky mashup stuff they're doing with some of the future installments in the MCU. So, like, the Doctor Strange movie has Scarlet Witch in it.
Yeah.
I felt like there was one or two other things that they mentioned, like, where I was like, oh, that character,
which,
like,
in the comic book, she's an actual witch.
Right. And there are some.
So she does frequently interact with Doctor Strange.
And there, they mentioned the horror thing. And I wondered, like, because I read, I think it's Jason Aaron's run also on Doctor Strange from a few years ago, which is excellent. It's creepy. It's really, and they talked about this one being more of a horror movie.
Which one is that?
I'm trying to
Which
remember.
One is that?
It's the one that starts with the woman that comes to find him, and she's got something under her hat. And then there's like creepy worms eating, like, and it's super trippy. It's very cool, though. I highly recommend it. It's really good. I want to say that was like 3 or 4 years ago, maybe.
I think I read that. I'm trying to.
I don't remember what any of the arcs are ever called. Is the problem? Okay. So, but it was. It was Jason Aaron's run. I do remember that because I really liked. I really liked his. Yeah, Zelma Stanton shows up.
Yeah, and, like, Zelma.
It,
right.
Yeah,
Zelma,
it, yeah. The library. Right. Yeah, she's a librarian.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So I like that a lot, and I read a little bit of the next one, which is the one with all the, like, robots that invade and, like,
the ones that are destroying,
like,
magic.
Yes. Yes. I read a little bit of that, and I got a little bit, like, burned out on that one. So, but yeah. But I'm intrigued a lot in the directions they're going with the next MCU outings, especially because it does feel like they've at long last sort of heralded some of the points for diversity and inclusion in the lineup.
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of which, Black Widow is the next movie.
Yeah, that seems a little. They've also lined up a Hawkeye thing, which I have to feel is a sequel or like a follow-on from
it
that.
Is the Hawkeye one specifically has been referenced to include Kate Bishop, which I'm super excited about, and the graphic they're using is the logo
from the
Matt Fraction
The Matt Fraction
I have a hard time picturing Jeremy Renner doing the Matt Fraction run, but like which is a shame because Matt Fraction run is just fantastic and
it's
canonically
so
one of the best comics. I mean, that was the comic that got me reading more superhero comics again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be. I mean, it's so great. I was gonna say something. What was it? Black Widow apparently takes place right after Civil War.
Really? I thought I heard it was pre-Avengers.
Yeah, I read that somewhere, which I was a little bit surprised about, but I mean, I guess. Because I don't know, I wasn't sure if they were going to bring her back somehow, or if or have another timeline version of her or what, but it sounds like it's going to be like a flashback thing.
Yeah, well, I think we all kind of assumed it would be a prequel in some way, just because
Yeah, I would think that definitely parts of it, would go back into our history.
And they've, I think they've announced the villain for that too, although not who is playing them. Taskmaster.
Taskmaster.
Yes. Yeah. Not to be confused with Sportsmaster.
It's Sportsmaster.
Different than Sportsmaster.
Taskmaster is the, I guess his special power is he can like do anything that he's seen someone else do. So like he can throw his shield like Cap as long as he's seen it, or he can like fight like, you know, Black Widow. And I've seen some speculation that there might be a like a switcheroo in terms of like, because they've acknowledged that that's the villain, but they haven't specifically said which of the actors is playing them.
Right.
I've heard some speculation already about like who they think of those characters will actually be playing that role.
Right. David Harbour is in it.
David Harbour's in it. Rachel Weisz is in it. Another one of my, I really enjoy her work too. She's another she's person great. Who I didn't think would necessarily ever show up in the MCU.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out you make 800 movies. Yep, eventually, everybody's going
to. And when you have a lot of money to throw around, it doesn't hurt either.
Right. And you know what? Yeah. You've been making good movies and whatever. You got Robert Redford. I mean,
true.
Yeah,
true.
You know,
in a really minor role.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he was big in that one movie, but.
But well, you know what I mean. It's like they've attracted.
But the overall arc, it's not really that big.
Right. No. But forget the role in the arc. You've attracted some great talent at that point, right? Like, I think there used to be a stigma and a shame to being in a superhero movie. I don't think that that's the case anymore. I don't. And I think that's because they've been actually making pretty good movies.
And they've been financially successful, which doesn't hurt either.
Well, yeah. Right. That's what I was going to say. I mean, I don't think these are going to necessarily win Oscars for Best Picture. Thor 4 is probably not going to win an Oscar for Best Picture, as much as I love Taika Waititi and all of it, and I think it's going to be great. I think these people are drawn to it because I think it's fun. It's dumb. It's fun, and it pays. Why not? Like, I mean, why not do it? Why not be Kate Blanchett and act huge?
Oh yeah.
Why not? Like, why would you not want to do that?
And she's
it's like, oh, you know what? Yeah, she's amazing. And you know what? It's like, what's the alternative? Oh, by the way, you're an aging housewife that smokes too much and is sad that your husband is a trucker who's never at home. Like, what? Like, what's, you know? Or you're a demigod.
Those are the options.
It's not that those are the options.
Goddess of death, or
right, or you're the goddess of death, right? It's not that those are the options. Of course, there's a million screenplays you can write that could serve her well. But I mean, if you want to live large, goddess of death is pretty large.
You don't get
much larger than that, you know.
Yeah.
So I think they've done a good job of setting up. A, making good films. B, setting up a playground where people want to play.
Yeah.
And I think that's served them well. I don't know how that's actually worked out for the cast. I haven't heard anything about them being abusive to their talent. I would be kind of shocked because that's basically their golden goose. But you know. Eventually, maybe that'll happen. But I think they've just done a wonderful job of setting something up where we like it, we have fun. They make way too much money, and not too much money. They make a lot of money. Like, you know what? Screw it. I retract that. They make way too much money.
Disney makes way too much
money. Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, Disney. Yeah. No, and the actors have a lot of fun doing what they're doing, acting big and over the top, and you also make a lot of money. Like, it seems like everybody's winning. Like, that's
Yeah.
You know, as much as you want to slam capitalism for all of its sins and abuses of people.
I do.
Me too. Yeah. I really, really do, which is why I almost went there. And this is not the appropriate place for that. That's fine. Sure. I don't really see yet. Maybe I'm not looking into it, but I don't see anything particularly abusive about this. So,
that was a long digression, but
I'm going to bring us back.
I understand what you're saying.
More power to them. I think they've done a great job, and I'm not surprised that they're going to keep making good movies and keep attracting great talent. Blade.
Yes. Blade coming back. Mahershala Ali, who is fantastic.
Yeah,
and it's already appeared once in the Marvel Universe in Luke Cage.
Has he won two Oscars?
All kind of getting brushed under the rug,
right?
Yeah,
has he? Yep. Yeah, well, who cares? Doesn't matter. Has he won two Oscars, or was he nominated for two Oscars?
He has won two Oscars.
That right? Okay, that guy is no joke.
No, yeah.
A handsome.
Right.
B
and to your point, wanted the job.
Right.
Yeah, especially a job where, like, they made three movies of this franchise that were, you know, I don't know, they're pretty middling.
They were movies.
They're fine, but, like...
They were movies that you could watch.
Right. And that was before the whole, you know, really early on in, like, comic book movies, right? Like, that was some of the, you know, in between sort of the era of, like, you know, your Batman films and your, you know... like the X-Men stuff kind of kicking off. I think the X-Men and Spider-Man kicking off sort of the modern day Marvel movies. Blade kind of snuck in there because nobody really knew that it was made. I think it came in at a time where, like, vampires, everyone thinks vampires are big. Let's kind of brush under the rug that this is all a comic book.
Right.
And especially when you've got Wesley Snipes there, who is, you know, an action movie star. You know, I remember people talking about Blade 2 a lot. I think Guillermo del Toro wrote and directed it, I believe.
Wow.
Which was, I think...
I've seen the first one. I can't remember if I've seen the second one.
Blade 2 people really like Blade 2. I've never seen the third
one. Blade 2 people.
No, I've said Blade 2. People really like Blade 2.
Oh, okay.
it is written by David Goyer. It's directed by Guillermo del Toro, which was one of the first things I ever saw him direct. I never saw the third one, which I hear is absolutely terrible. But that one was fairly popular. I'm interested that they're bringing that back. I think that might have been another case where they didn't have, you know, Marvel sold off all its property kind of for parts, like in the late 90s. And I guess maybe they eventually got those rights back. But that's an interesting...
Yeah, I think so. But I forget from where. That one's not one that I'm not sure where that one went.
It was a New Line.
Okay.
Yeah. So part of Warner... Ironically, part of Warner Brothers.
Weird.
In addition to that, we've got the Shang-Chi movie, which we knew was coming, but we now have a cast, including Simu Liu, who I did watch one episode of the show Kim's Convenience that he's in, and he seemed fine. Like, I only watched one episode, so I didn't really get a good sense of him, but it seems interesting. But also Tony Leung, who is like a big actor in China, like a Hong Kong film, I want to say.
Yeah, right.
I've definitely seen him in other stuff, playing the Mandarin, which I was like, wow, you're
doing it. I know.
Yeah, I'm a little shocked. I'm a little shocked that they're going to do that, especially because they kind of, I thought they came up with a very clever solution to dealing with that in Iron Man 3. But they're also doing a callback to the original Iron Man by having it be connected to the Ten Rings.
Right.
Which...
And you know the Marvel one-shot.
Right? I'm trying to remember if I've actually watched that whole thing, because for a while it was hard to find.
Yeah, so Trevor... Well, if you haven't seen it, go see it. But if you have not seen it and don't want to know what happens, skip ahead like a minute. But Trevor Slattery goes to jail and then gets busted out by some people who say he needs to go meet the real Mandarin.
Mm. Yeah.
So and that's basically where it ends. It's like, it's just it drops that shoe and then is over.
I wonder if they'll bring Kingsley back for this.
I would hope so. That would be great.
It would be a funny cameo.
Yeah.
We've also got The Eternals, which I know virtually nothing about. And I confess, every time I see them, I think, is this them just taking a crack at doing Inhumans again, basically?
The cast for it is crazy.
Yeah. Angelina Jolie, Richard Madden from Game of Thrones and Bodyguard, Kumail Nanjiani, I don't know, Selma Hayek, Brian Tyree Henry, who was actually the voice of Miles's dad in Enter the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah, right. Yep.
And then a few other actors that I don't know as well. Lauren Ridloff, Leah McHugh, and Don Lee. One of whom I believe they said will be the first deaf superhero in the MCU.
Hmm.
That's cool. Okay. Which is cool. Yeah. There is, as I mentioned, like a big push on this. Like, you know, so the... I'm... Of the five films announced for Phase 4, only one is directed by a white dude. So that's a pretty good, pivot in ratios there. I hope they can keep it up.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable given, I was going to say the history of the franchise, the history of life and the universe, pretty much everything. I think that's great that's the diversity of the directors, I think, is gonna
and the casts too,
and the cast is gonna make a more fulfilling and broader story. And we're three, well, John and I, middle-aged white guys, and Dan's a Dan. You know,
Dan's
he's a kid. Aspiring.
He's aspiring to be middle-aged. Yeah, it's very cute. You know, he keeps so trying. It's so adorable.
Only middle-aged if I'm going to live to be more than 100.
Oh, yeah. You can find a way to make anything negative, my friend. I love you for it. The spectrum that they're introducing, I think, will make for better stories for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, think about how great Black Panther was.
Right.
I mean, one of the best movies in the whole franchise.
And, if not
the best.
You know, to hook into Guy's earlier point, not exactly cynical about it, but, like, they've also proved that that's good business, right? Like, it's good business to have a representative... a representative universe in which people can see themselves. People will go to those movies. And I think they not only is it the right thing to do, but it is also the, you know, business right thing to do. And I'm glad that they're delivering on that, because it was, you know, for all of the stuff the MCU did right, that was their most glaring misstep, was the fact that so much of their stuff was about and by white guys.
Yeah.
So good that they're moving in that direction. I hope it continues as such. In addition to all those movies, we've got all the Disney Plus shows, most of which we had heard about before. Falcon and Winter Soldier, which does take place after Endgame. WandaVision, which takes place after Endgame.
Can we stop on Falcon for a second? Because I'm excited that Daniel Brühl is going to be in that.
Oh, yes.
Because he was terrific in Civil War.
Yep, I agree. I am curious as to why they're calling it Falcon and Winter Soldier. I guess he's going to continue going by Falcon.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. We'll see.
Do they confirm? I heard there was a rumor that Emily Van Camp would be returning as Sharon Carter too.
She's listed on the IMDb page.
Yeah, okay. So. I've seen it. I didn't know if it was officially confirmed, but I had seen it floating around, which is good. I'm glad that they're bringing her back. Another actress I really like who I felt was somewhat underutilized.
Yep.
Especially post, she's great in Winter Soldier. They give her a little bit to do in Civil War, and then she just kind of vanishes. And she was one of the rare, one of the few side characters to not show up at some point in Endgame.
True. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I think they kind of dropped her. That it confused the Peggy Carter thing, I think. Right?
I mean, I think they knew what they were doing.
Maybe they decided they were going to go in that direction, that they were we should probably get rid of her. You know,
What's the value? Sense. What's the value? The only thing you're going to do is undervalue that character. That's the only thing you can do. Yeah. Let's not do that. Let's just not have you.
Right.
Which, I know that's bad, but it's better than the alternative, I think.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to see that they found a place for... we've got WandaVision, which is also post-Endgame and leads into Doctor Strange, and apparently has Paul Bettany in it.
Yeah.
Lots of questions about that one, and apparently also an adult version of Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
Very cool. Random, which is, but very totally cool.
Right.
I'm fascinated by all these Disney Plus shows. I'm really excited to see them. And, like, you know, we've talked a little bit in the past about the Marvel and MCU tie-ins with these shows, the previous shows, which were ostensibly part of it and then kind of diverged the farther we went, including S.H.I.E.L.D. And it seems very clear that, especially with the fact that they're pouring money into these things and bringing in all of these actors from the film franchise, that they are intertwining these very closely with the movies and considering them more, you know, basically one continuous story.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting way too, to glue people into things, as you like, because we're so used to watching and streaming and binging things now. Like, it's an interesting way to, like, keep people invested in the franchise between the movies coming out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. It's a hard thing to keep up on.
Sure.
On. I think it basically means I'm just going to cut. I mean, I don't. If they're going to continue doing Hulu series, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch them anymore.
Well, and mostly these things. What's nice is that at least most of these, the Disney Plus series seem to only be 6-episode series.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a big plus.
Yeah.
We got a Loki series, which, as we speculated, is Loki's adventures with the Tesseract from Endgame, running around causing trouble, I guess.
Loki loves the Tesseract.
And then there's the What If one as well. So that one has a huge cast on it. Anyways, lots of good stuff to look forward to there. And I'm sure we will be talking about it
and how.
I want to do a really quick letter and then we'll wrap up.
Yep. Sounds great.
All right. To the letters page. We have a question. I guess we kind of discussed this a little bit, but I will also just throw it out there because it is from our friendly neighborhood librarian, James Farner, who asks if any of us have read Matt Fraction's Hawkeye run or Kelly Thompson's Kate Bishop Hawkeye, and could the show be the sleeper hit of Marvel's announcements?
Oh, that's not a bad question.
I hope so. I mean, you know, they haven't cast Kate Bishop yet, have they?
Not that I have heard, no.
Yeah. You know, that'll obviously make a big difference, but... and again, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if it takes that sort of comedic approach.
Well,
I think Jeremy Renner can be a really good actor. I think he was terrific in American Hustle, and
he's fine.
Maybe
he's fine. There was nothing wrong. He didn't get a particularly well written role. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was hanging out with his kids in Endgame, great. You know.
Well,
They are always, like, they gave him very, very little to do, and. They killed Nat over him, which I can't forgive. I can't forgive that. That's sort of BS. But
they mentioned the other thing they did mention was that they will delve a little bit in this series into his time as Ronin.
Oh, okay.
So I'm curious.
Interesting.
That seems
that's not
a little
gonna
bit
be exactly a laugh riot.
Yeah, exactly. That seems a little bit at odds with that.
but it could be handled well.
And I hope there's Pizza Dog.
Yeah, that's the big question.
Yeah.
Will there be Pizza Dog?
Have they cast Pizza Dog yet?
Yeah, but I don't know. Sleeper hit, maybe. Of all the ones listed, I think the Falcon Winter Soldier one is kind of the one I'm most interested in.
Yeah. Well, it's tough between those two, I would say. It's between those two.
The WandaVision one seems really, really trippy. I heard that some of it was inspired by the Tom King Vision run, which is super freaking weird.
Do you remember which one that
is? That's the one that's like feels like it's set in like suburbia.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
a is really, it really weird series. That.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't it's know really where you're going with that one. I heard that mentioned, and I heard House of M mentioned. I'm like, that is two very strange properties to build a series on.
Yeah.
Anyway, could be. I look forward to the Hawkeye one. I enjoy those comics a lot, and I'm hoping that they borrow heavily from that.
Yep.
All right. We should wrap up for this week. I know a lot going on, and we didn't even touch on some bunch of other stuff with Arrow news and MC. Or,
yeah, I DC think. I think that's probably going to take a while, and so let's try to do that next week. Because turns out a little bit of shuffle going on in the Arrowverse.
Yes, so, yeah. a lot happening.
So also some craziness.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So
Burt Ward.
That's super weird.
I'll just say that one. Leave it at that.
Yeah. We'll have to table that to a future show. And so all I guess that remains is for me to thank my pals for being here. Guy English, thanks for being on the show as always.
Thank you. I didn't say much this week because I'm trying to behave myself better. I don't think I got a... I'm not sure if I got a Star Trek joke in this week, which is like something that is... I don't... Whatever.
You were very busy lining up the sponsors.
No, right. Well, I mean, you know, whatever.
Well put.
There's no sponsors. There's no sponsors this week. I don't know if you've noticed.
There's no sponsors
any week. It's not really a thing. Yeah. Okay. Are you saying we're
not getting that bomb spray money?
Oh, well, okay. Hang on a second, okay?
What are we waiting for?
Where's he going?
Computer, end program. Computer, end program.
Oh computer! Man,
you're gonna accidentally shut your computer down.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna shut down reality. That's gonna be a bummer.
That sounds dangerous. John Maltz, well,
does it?
Always a pleasure.
This is also a super trippy show.
I agree. It will become trippier by far as I disappear for the next few weeks.
I'm just imagining.
Good luck to all of you.
I swear to God, John and I can hold this together. I promise you. Oh yeah,
find an adult.
I can think of no finer way to end this week's episode than by the immortal words of good night and good luck. You can do it next week when I'm not here.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you were the captain.
Look at me.
He's the
director. I am the captain now.
I am the captain now. Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
So, you know what? If you were a good editor, you would put that drop in.
I mean, I probably will. I'll just put it at the end. I did that with last week's episode. I know you guys don't listen
to
it.
You did. Yeah. No, I actually no, I do. I really do. And it embarrasses me when I am embarrassing and I hate it. but I suffer through it because, you know.
Well, last week's outtake was good because it involved Guy trying to start the show, then me trying to start the show, then me failing to start the show.
Right. Yeah. I really did enjoy it. That's kind of why I did the same gag.
Crowd loves it.
Yeah. Anyway.
All right.
You are the captain now.
Thank you.